You're listening to Agriculture Today.
With a massive $50 billion ag trade deficit weighing on U.S. producers, USDA announcing a three-point plan to expand export opportunities. The initiative follows new reciprocal trade agreements negotiated by President Trump and aims to open markets, enforce commitments, and support rural prosperity. Plan includes $285 million in early funding for the America First Trade Promotion Program, targeting missions to connect U.S. sellers with buyers in new markets, and a revitalization of the GSM 102 Export Credit Guarantee Program. USDA officials say these steps will reduce risk, improve financing, and make U.S. commodities more competitive abroad. Strategy announced by Ag Secretary Brooke Rollins and Undersecretary Luke Lindberg intended to restore momentum for American ag in global commerce while strengthening the farm economy. But with the U.S. government offering $20 billion in economic support to Argentina, soybean farmers say they're being left behind in the fight for global markets. Treasury Secretary Scott Bessent confirmed negotiations to extend a swap line and potentially purchase Argentine bonds. Almost immediately, Argentina waived taxes on soybean exports, and it led to the sale of 20 shiploads of soybeans to China. The development comes at a time when U.S. soybean exports to China remain stalled under retaliatory tariffs. It leaves Brazil and Argentina to capture the market. According to the American Soybean Association, lack of progress on a U.S.-China trade deal creating significant pressure on farmers as harvest gets underway. Prices have weakened. Producers worry competitors securing long-term relationship with China at America's expense. And getting it there. Transportation challenges mounting as drought lowers Mississippi River levels, pushing freight rates higher. U.S. Coast Guard has tightened restrictions, limiting southbound drafts to 10.5 feet near Memphis and capping tow sizes at 6 barges wide. Northbound traffic faces even stricter limits, with drafts reduced to 10 feet and shorter tows. U.S. Army Corps of Engineers has begun dredging near Memphis and Hickman, Kentucky, trying to keep traffic moving. Grain barge movements for the week ending September 13th, totaling 252,000 tons, down 30% from the previous week, 32% below last year. Ocean shipping costs climbing, Gulf to Japan rates $57.25 per metric ton. It's up 25% year to date, while Pacific Northwest rates rose to $29.75. Rail volume softening as well. 22,201 grain carloads originated the week of September 6th, a 3% decline year over year. Finally, USDA reminding wheat producers deadline to apply for or update crop insurance policies for fall-planted crops is approaching. Sales closing dates vary by crop and region, but the next deadline is September 30th, and it's an important one for wheat as producers finalize coverage decisions with their crop insurance agents to ensure protection for the 2026 crop year. It's Agriculture Today.
If you're going to succeed, you need cotton that's strong enough to perform around here where you grow. That's why Delta Pine cotton varieties are bred to meet the needs of your neck of the woods and are rigorously evaluated by local growers for maximum performance potential and consistency year after year. Strong cotton performance starts around here with locally tested Delta Pine cotton. Learn more at DeltaPine.com. Read and follow pesticide label directions, grain marketing, and other stewardship practices.
You are right in the heat of the season. With field maintenance, planting, fertilizing, and spraying, you don't have time for equipment breakdowns. Let Wiley Implement and Spray Center, your Case IH dealer, be your partner in keeping your equipment running at peak performance. Our factory-trained technicians support you with in-field service and genuine Case IH parts. Wiley has 13 locations across Texas and Oklahoma. Visit us online at WileySprayers.com.
I'm Scott Wiley. We'll try hard to earn your business, but even harder to keep it. That's it. That's all.
Ag News Now. Agriculture Today.
Well, I think you have to go to the Federal Reserve Bank's dual mandate.
Brian Brigeman is a Kansas State ag economist on what the move from the FOMC means.
So the Federal Reserve, as it is currently constructed as the central bank for the United States, has a dual mandate where they must maintain stable prices, which means control inflation, and also to have full employment, which, as Brady was talking about, you know, maintain a reasonable unemployment rate. And if you look at some of the most recent data that's come in, actually, we've seen both of those measures tick up here recently, inflation as well as unemployment. So I think that's where Chairman Powell, as Brady mentioned, is saying that those risks are now equal and maybe starting to pivot a little bit more to focusing on the labor market.
FOMC is Federal Open Market Committee, led by Jerome Powell, Chairman of the Federal Reserve. But what's reasonable employment?
That's a great question. It's debated within the literature. But as far as the Federal Reserve, what they use is a unemployment rate of 4.2%. And that is ticked up to 4.3%. And there's been a lot of softening within the labor market. So kind of part of the reason for the concern is, where are these jobs being created currently, right? We see the jobs report most recent had 22,000 additional jobs, but they're not coming from a lot of those industries that really show a vibrant economy. We're seeing pullback in manufacturing. We're seeing a pullback in business services. And those things are not good for the labor market going forward. So, you know, with those concerns, and then also having a number of downward revisions to the jobs report for the end of 2024 and the beginning of 2025, those numbers are slow to come in as businesses report, and they were too high, and those estimates had to be revised down. And so that also, you know, kind of points to that maybe the labor market isn't as strong footing. But of course, there is still inflation as well.
So what does all of this mean for farm interest rates?
Well, I think the one thing that the folks listening to this, when we hear Fed funds rate going down, does that mean our farm real estate mortgage rates are going to go down? And that, the Fed funds rate is an overnight lending rate between banks. And so that is a very short term, very short run interest rate, where farm real estate interest rates, you know, and other commercial, you know, interest rates, they're priced off of largely the 10-year treasury rate. And that short run and then the longer run, there's a bit of a disconnect. And in fact, when we look at 10-year treasury rates, they still remain elevated. So we haven't seen them, you know, come off. So as far as, you know, guidance, you know, for future farm interest rates, you know, my anticipation would be they could remain elevated here for a while as we figure out where the economy is going. If the economy is going to go down, we could see those 10-year rates come off. But if the treasury market demands a premium for the significant deficit spending the United States have, the significant debt that we have as a nation, we could see those rates go up. So we're really in kind of a pivot point. You know, where's this economy going to go, and what's that ultimate implication going to be for U.S. agriculture?
It's Agriculture Today.
This has been Scott Land Company in Dimmitt, Texas. We have literally sold thousands of acres of grassland in Texas, New Mexico, Colorado, and Oklahoma. Our inventory on ranches is as low as it has been in years. We really need listings on ranches of all sizes. Look at our website, scottlandcompany.com. Give us a call at 800-933-9698.
Manage your risk and take advantage of opportunities with StoneX. Utilizing StoneX's global presence to provide the best in market intelligence, a vast portfolio of risk management and marketing products, and a team of brokers who specialize in working with those in agriculture, StoneX provides the resources you need to make the best possible decisions. Learn more about the StoneX Advantage. Call Donna Hughes at 214-613-1688.
There's substantial risk to futures and options trading. Not all products are suitable for all producers.
with Agriculture Today. Here's Tony St. James.
This is related to seed cotton enrollment.
Mark Brown is Director of Field Services with Plains Cotton Growers.
And this is based on the fact that we scored a really big win for producers out here through that one big beautiful bill that was passed back in July. In fact, we scored multiple wins in that particular bill. Most all of the priorities in terms of legislation and promotion of cotton were included in that bill. And one of them was that back in July when this bill was passed, that it increased the reference prices for the ARC and PLC programs and consequently made it a lot more favorable and a lot easier for a payment to be triggered relative to the kind of market conditions that we're experiencing right now versus when those rules were originally written back in the 2018 Farm Bill. But Tony, that also created a problem because producers had already been required to have made their crop insurance decisions back in the middle of March. And for producers that elected to take stacks as an insurance endorsement on their cotton, then stacks does not allow you to participate in ARC or PLC. Because of that condition, there has been a brief time period, a window of enrollment that's been opened up, and it actually closes September 30th. But you can look, and if you are currently enrolled in the Stacks program and you want to evaluate the increase in the PLC and how that might impact potential payments based on the 2025 crop that we have in the field today. Now, we're just now getting into that marketing year, so we still have a lot of unknowns out there, but it certainly is something to look at based on your stacks versus enrolling in the PLC. So up until September 30th, producers do have the option to do that. Now, if they so choose that, then it requires a 60% premium penalty payment with their stacks, and they will waive the right to any stacks indemnity for the 2025 crop, but that allows them to enroll in PLC or in ARC. And again, that deadline is fast approaching. It is on September 30th.
Looking down the road, what could potential and additional sanctions mean for fertilizer? Thomas Pernias is with StoneX.
If sanctions were applied to the fertilizer market, and if that meant that Russian products suddenly became inaccessible for Brazilian producers, we would be talking about a worst-case scenario for Brazil, because Brazil would not be able to redirect and shift its demand to other suppliers in just a few weeks.
Right.
We're dealing here with more than 10 million tons of Russian products that are imported by Brazil every single year. Mm-hmm. And for Brazilian producers, this would mean higher fertilizer costs, this would mean squeezed margins, demand destruction, and possibly a decrease in agricultural production. Let's remember that Brazil imports nearly 85% of the fertilizer used in the domestic market. You just cannot simply switch suppliers in this case. We would be talking about a complete transformation of the global fertilizer trade flow.
It's Agriculture Today.
Purple Wave Auction remains the trusted leader in online equipment auctions. What makes the difference is you. You are part of our growing global community that continues to trust Purple Wave with the equipment that builds and feeds America. This trust placed in us by our community, from construction to ag producers and fleet drivers, brings great equipment opportunities to their next owners. Join the Purple Wave community today. PurpleWave.com.
You hear that? That's the sound of forever. Because there's nowhere else you'd rather spend forever than on land like this. Tending a herd, growing crops, raising a family. At Capital Farm Credit, we thrive at helping the next generation of farmers and ranchers like yourself by providing advice, products, and opportunities to help you build a life on the land you love most. To learn more, visit CapitalFarmCredit.com. Capital Farm Credit. Together, we're better.
You're listening to Agriculture Today.
Secretary Rawlins, that Mexico had informed her that they had discovered a beef animal with the larva of the New World screwworm less than 70 miles from the U.S. border.
Arlen Suderman is Chief Commodities Analyst with StoneX.
That's a real concern. That's the furthest north that we've seen in this current infestation as they're moving north. Mexico said, but not to worry, because there was an animal that had been transported from the south and had been detected quick enough before the larva had had a chance to turn into adult flies. That would be the real problem. That's where it could spread. But the problem is, why was the animal allowed to be transported north in the first place? So the bottom line here is, it says that we're not likely to see Secretary Rawlins open the border with Mexico anytime soon for cattle to come north to the United States to be fed in our feedlots, keeping supplies tight. But in that same statement from Secretary Rawlins, she had a single sentence in there saying that we should expect an announcement from the Trump administration later this week, announcing a plan to increase the U.S. cattle supply. Now, the markets immediately interpreted that as some type of financial incentive to incentivize the industry to hold back valuable heifers to increase or to regrow the breeding supply. These young female animals right now, many of them, most of them, are going to the feedlots to be fed for beef, since we have a very tight supply, and therefore we're not able to rebuild the breeding herd because of that. And basically, it comes down to producers are facing the option of getting a lot of money right now up front for an animal, or holding her back to rebuild the breeding herd and getting a possible return from her 3 to 4 years from now. And so they're taking the bird in the hand instead of the two in the bush right now, so to speak. And they're selling the animal now, and we're not rebuilding the breeding herd, which was shrunk originally because of persistent drought in the western half of the United States. So what kind of incentive program will it be? We don't know yet. Will it be opening up federal grasslands for grazing? Will it be some type of direct cash payment like crop farmers have received from the Trump administration? Will it be some type of tax credit for producers? What will it be? Will it be opening up simply exempting Brazilian beef from the 50% tariff that's currently on it to increase the supply of beef? Well, the statements seem to indicate increase the cattle supply, so that suggests that it's probably not the Brazil option, although that could always happen. So we continue to wait. Meanwhile, Mexico continues to be a red-hot buyer of U.S. corn. And in fact, we got another flash sale this morning. They've been coming almost daily now, with Mexico buying another 12.3 million bushels overnight. Known corn sales from these flash sales, and only flash sales over 100,000 metric ton are required to be reported, so we know there's typically many more of the smaller units. Over the last week, we have seen a total of 34.1 million bushels of U.S. corn sold to Mexico, with most of that being current year corn. And on top of that, we had a sale to unknown destinations during that time period of 8.1 million bushels, which also may very well have been Mexico. Many of those sales to unknown destinations are Mexico. So this suggests we're going to continue our record selling pace of corn sales to Mexico and to the world for some time yet, even with the tax holiday on exports out of Argentina that is currently going on, although exporters are really focusing mostly on selling soybeans there, although corn and wheat could also fall under those advantages of being able to benefit from that.
It's Agriculture Today.
Let's talk about supply chains. Each year, Cotton Incorporated's global supply chain marketing team has hundreds of meetings with brands and retailers in all corners of the globe. They're working to find innovative ways to replace synthetic fabrics with natural, sustainable cotton to expand your customer base and drive more demand. You grow the cotton. The Cotton Research and Promotion Program helps grow the value. Learn more at cottonboard.org.
If you're going to succeed, you need cotton that's strong enough to perform around here where you grow. That's why Delta Pine cotton varieties are bred to meet the needs of your neck of the woods and are rigorously evaluated by local growers for maximum performance potential and consistency year after year. Strong cotton performance starts around here with locally tested Delta Pine cotton. Learn more at DeltaPine.com. Read and follow pesticide label directions, grain marketing, and other stewardship practices.
Ag News Now. Agriculture Today.
Now let's take a look at what actually happened to imports once the tariffs went into effect.
Sean Arita is the Associate Director and Research Associate Professor with the Ag Policy Risk Center at North Dakota State University.
This slide shows total U.S. fertilizer imports before and after the IEEPA tariffs. By product, potash is down about 3%, nitrogen about 6%, and phosphate's down the most, nearly 25%. Some of that phosphate decline is likely reflected by demand destruction for price issues outside of IEEPA for some of the reasons that Delphine had explained earlier. But we are likely seeing some degree of these IEEPA tariffs taking hold. It's also worth noting that while potash was ultimately granted a broad exemption, there was still a lot of uncertainty earlier this year. Importers weren't first sure whether these shipments would be covered, and there was a cloud of uncertainty likely contributed to this early dip in volumes. But the big picture is that the fertilizer imports have declined. But behind those numbers, the story is more complex. Some suppliers have fallen away while exempt suppliers have picked up the slack. So this slide breaks down import changes separately across fertilizers hit by IEEPA tariffs and those that were exempt. The red bar show the IEEPA tariffed products, and the declines are steep. Potash imports drop by nearly 3/4. That's actually a very, very small group that was non-exempt, very small amount of tariff lines for potash. But nitrogen fell about 30%, and phosphates were down about 20%. But the exempt categories, again, they tell a very different story. These are the green bars. Those actually grew for phosphates. They rose about 20%, and potash held up better than the IEEPA affected groups. And then there's Russia. The blue bars show their shipments, which were exempt. These flows really stand out. Double-digit increases in both nitrogen and potash. In effect, U.S. buyers leaned heavily on Russian supply to fill some of these gaps left by our other suppliers. That's helped fertilizer availability in the U.S., but it also creates vulnerability. Europe, for example, has recently imposed new sanctions on Russian fertilizers if geopolitical tensions escalate further, or if Russian exports get disrupted, the U.S. could find itself really exposed to Russia dependence. So the bottom line here is, though, that imports under the IEEPA tariffs have fallen, exempt flows rose, especially from Russia. This adaptation has helped in the short run, but it leaves us more dependent on a risky source of supply, and it has not completely filled the gap. So what has been the effect on prices? Are U.S. farmers paying more for their fertilizers? One way we can examine this is by looking at the price spreads of the U.S. with the rest of the world surrounding the imposition of the IEEPA tariffs. So here we use Brazil's CIF prices as a reference point. If tariffs were really biting in terms of prices, we'd expect U.S. price premiums over Brazil to widen after the tariff imposition. So starting off on the left with urea, the U.S. premium over Brazil did rise a bit after the reciprocal tariffs, as we can see in that dotted line, but it also lines up with the seasonal bump we usually see around this time. So it's not easy to say how much of this tariffs is normal market patterns. On the top right is MAP. For a while, the spread stayed pretty flat, but more recently, we have seen some upward trend in that price spread. And the bottom right is potash. Again, here, potash was largely exempt, so you don't really see too much of a change, and we shouldn't expect too much to begin with. So the takeaway is mixed. We have seen some hints of rising pressure in urea and MAP, but it's not definitive. And since potash was exempt, it serves as a good check, at least as a reference point. For now, global supply and demand still look like the main drivers in the road test. Will be what happens when we head into the spring planting when U.S. demand really picks up.
It's Agriculture Today.
You are right in the heat of the season. With field maintenance, planting, fertilizing, and spraying, you don't have time for equipment breakdowns. Let Wiley Implement and Spray Center, your Case IH dealer, be your partner in keeping your equipment running at peak performance. Our factory-trained technicians support you with in-field service and genuine Case IH parts. Wiley has 13 locations across Texas and Oklahoma. Visit us online at WileySprayers.com.
I'm Scott Wiley. We'll try hard to earn your business, but even harder to keep it. That's it. That's all.
This has been Scott Land Company in Dimmitt, Texas. We have literally sold thousands of acres of grassland in Texas, New Mexico, Colorado, and Oklahoma. Our inventory on ranches is as low as it has been in years. We really need listings on ranches of all sizes. Look at our website, scottlandcompany.com. Give us a call at 800-933-9698.
With Agriculture Today, here's Tony St. James.
Today I'd like to visit with our dairy farmers about a topic that has been coming up in our nutrition circles as we look at the impact of the nutrition programs that we have for our gestating cows, how that impacts our offspring or the heifers that are being born into our herds.
Dr. Mike Brook, Kansas State Dairy Specialist.
As we think about the heifers that we have on our farm and those calves that are coming into our herds, we got to be concerned about what the future looks like for those animals and how they're going to impact our dairy herd as well as the profitability of our farms. So for many, many decades now, we've recognized the importance of genetics in this process, and we've got these excellent genetic selection programs now that we utilize to, you know, just program in the right genetics into our herd and to try to fine-tune that. But today I want to encourage you that it's more than just the genetics. You know, if the animals are actually going to be able to express their genetic potential, then they need to have the right nutrition programs in place as well. One of the things over the last decade or so that we've become increasingly interested in and aware of is the importance of the nutrition of the dam and how that impacts the growth of the offspring. You know, for many years we've recognized that protein nutrition and energy nutrition, actually the excesses or not having enough of either of those nutrients in the diet, would have a negative impact on the offspring. However, as we've moved forward in the last 10 years, there's probably some things that we need to continue to fine-tune in those rations over and above protein and energy, although those tend to still be very important to our nutrition program of these dams that are carrying these very expensive calves today. So what are some other things that you might need to consider? Well, number one, the reason you need to consider these things is we do have good research now that shows that how we feed the dam will impact the future production of that calf that she is carrying. So whether we look at how that impacts future milk production, how it impacts marbling or carcass traits of that animals, they're all impacted. So some of the things that you might want to visit with your nutritionist about as you think about the nutrition of those dams that are in your herd, you might want to talk about things like rumen-protected methionine and lysine. Are we doing that? Is it something that we need to do? Because we know that there are some very positive effects on the growth of the offspring when we do supplement our animals with these things. Some other things that are coming to light is the importance of omega-3 fatty acid supplements and how that impacts the growth and production of the offspring that that animal is going to have. So as we think about the genetic potential of those young calves, we really need to be concerned that we're feeding the dam in a way that will allow that calf to grow and contain the genetic material and the ability to express that genetic material in terms of milk production and growth potential after the animal is born. So the importance of the nutrition of the dam becomes more of a focus for us on our dairy.
Kansas State Dairy Specialist Dr. Mike Brook. It's Agriculture Today.
Manage your risk and take advantage of opportunities with StoneX. Utilizing StoneX's global presence to provide the best in market intelligence, a vast portfolio of risk management and marketing products, and a team of brokers who specialize in working with those in agriculture, StoneX provides the resources you need to make the best possible decisions. Learn more about the StoneX Advantage. Call Donna Hughes at 214-613-1688.
There's substantial risk to futures and options trading. Not all products are suitable for all producers.
When you raise dryland cotton, one of the only things you control is input costs. Reduce your seed costs by as much as 75% without sacrificing yield potential with BSD9X cotton from Brownfield Seed and Delining. Perfectly adapted for dryland acres, BSD9X is large seed and has excellent early season vigor and consistently yields at the top in university trials. Find out about BSD9X by calling 806-637-6282 or visit brownfieldseed.com.